Hello, and welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and the program you're listening to is Abled, and it's the program that we're doing specifically today is on online learning during the COVID-19 pandemic. We really want to talk about online learning. Is it connected or is it disconnected? I think there's probably a little bit of both. And today we are interviewing Amy Alexander. And Amy is a former graduate student of mine, one of my bright lights in my past of education as I think back. She's a middle school teacher. She teaches 6th, 7th, and 8th special education. And she teaches also resource room and inclusion math. And I'm assuming, Amy, that the inclusion math is a kind of a general math class that has kids with disabilities in it and also teaches learning strategies for students with IEPs. And for those of you that don't know that, that is individual education programs or individual education plans. And to get an IEP, you have to qualify and show a need for specially designed instruction related to your social, emotional skills or behavior. And behavior most often being executive functioning skills. And not only is she a teacher, but she's a parent as well. I know her boys very well, and she has two boys and experience being on the parent side of the IEP because she has some kids with special needs. She has a COVID senior this year. He just got accepted into WSU and is already flying airplanes. And his current flight is for children, or her current fight, I guess. He is working with the homeless population. Their attendance struggle to achieve, their overrepresentation in special education and school discipline, and their ever-widening education gap. And I think that that was, you know, when I was in teaching for many years and probably had pretty much the same population of students, I think that was really difficult because even many times these students, even though you got them in resource rooms and you provided them with specialized skills, the gap many times didn't get smaller. It still gets bigger. And so that's one of the things that we want to talk about today. Amy, why don't you just tell me a little bit about now, of course, you're online, but before you had a class of students, tell me what your day looked like. And your typical class, what that looked like.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your show, Steve.
Yes, this is big time radio, so don't mess up. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, a typical day, you know, in middle school, it's broken down into periods. And I taught every period except for my one planning period. So I would have my usually small class, usually 8 to 12 students. And I was teaching three sections of learning strategies. One was a sixth grade only, so we spent a lot of time learning how to do school and talking about how to manage as opposed to elementary school and transition into this new life.
So this was a transition class, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and executive functioning, you know, help them how to organize and plan, use their planner and manage having six different teachers who do things six different ways and knowing, you know, that you have to be flexible with that. And but the problem was that because I taught I had those kids for that hour. When they were out in their other classes, I wasn't available to come running if they needed me. They had to be very independent. They had to go on and do their general education, social studies, and science. And sometimes there was a para in the room for support, but oftentimes not. So even though they qualify in special education, they still have to go out there and be pretty independent at times.
And tell me, like, you might have a kid in your class or a student in your class that has behavior issues, learning disabilities. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So, you know, executive functioning skills could be, you know, like they struggle with on-task behavior and maybe being distracted, maybe talking too much or being off-topic during their classes, getting up, wandering around, maybe needing a break. And so when they're in the gen ed, those behaviors oftentimes do make it difficult for the teacher. And sometimes there's more extreme behaviors, but usually they're just typical distractions.
You know, those are also really socialization skills. I would think when you're online, teaching those socialization skills would be much more difficult than if you've got kids physically in a class where they can, you know, immediately get to you for help or those kinds of things.
Yeah, well, it's tricky online because, we're on a block schedule in my district, and we have the kids for 2 hour blocks, which is way too long for them to be on, and especially for 6 classes, 3 per day. So we usually have about an hour's worth of lesson, and then they have some asynchronous time, meaning they can go off by themselves. But the problem is when they're with other teachers and they have a moment where they would like some support or help, I'm not available because I'm teaching another class. I'm online in a Zoom with other kids. So it does make it very tricky. And I know it's very frustrating for parents at times because they feel like they probably have their moments where they feel like their child's not being supported. But they are. It's just we kind of have to wait for our opportunity to be together.
You know, and I have to laugh, too. I hear some people say, well, you know, teachers are now only working 3 hours a day, you know, that is just a joke because most of the teachers that I know, I mean, I would say all the teachers I know are working as long, if not many, most cases longer because you've also got the technology issues that you have to deal with. And I think that when this COVID thing came on, we had no model to we didn't know what to do. And it hit us right in the face very, very quickly. I think most people thought that kids were going to be going to school by the end of the school year, or this was going to take a month or 2 months and we'd be back running like we used to. And everything is just turned upside down. Do you feel like you are being able to communicate with the parents in the home situation? Is that positive? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, so I am working a lot more hours. I was already working a lot of personal time. I'm working a lot more now. When I am on with those kids, I am focused on them. And I oftentimes am on for the whole 2 hours with at least one or two of them because in the learning strategies classes, oftentimes some of them need help with their work.
Okay.
So they'll stay with me and do their work. So I'm on the whole time. So I'm not able to multitask or do other work during that time. So inevitably, I'm going to be doing quite a bit of homework. I'm paid for some of that. You know, I do get a special ed stipend, but it doesn't touch the hours that I put into it. My contract time is 7.5 hours a day, I think. I work closer to 10. I get up at 5 a.m. because I'm more alert and sharper in the morning. That's just my more productive time. And I start with the kids at 8:30, and we stop teaching at 3:30, and I usually keep right on working until I get hungry and stop and have dinner.
Yes, yes.
And then I take time to get ready for the next day so that I know exactly what to do first thing in the morning, because I tend to, you know, forget a little bit over the evening. But for all of us teachers, this is our first year of teaching. Even if we've been teaching 10, 15, 20 years, this is our first year of teaching. I've spent so much time on technology and learning how to do things. I have probably wasted so much time sitting trying to figure out one little thing that if somebody had been there, could have been helped, yeah, you know, in short order. But I spent so much time struggling, trying to figure it out for myself. And, you know, it's times like that that makes it very stressful. And, you know, the anxiety starts building up and the exhaustion. As far as communicating with parents, that is difficult to do while I'm teaching. Emailing is always the best. I am set up with a Google Voice phone here at home, so I am able to call parents and text parents. But, you know, we have a whole spectrum of parents. We have the ones that are overly involved all the way to the ones that I can't get a hold of.
Yes.
And seem to not be involved at all, and it's very frustrating, especially, you know, when it comes to behaviors and things or an assignment that's due. Sometimes it's very time-sensitive.
And I think that would be, you know, I think what you're saying, Amy, I think is I hear pretty universally, is that the frustration comes not so much from working with the students, but in just working with the technology to make sure that it works right so you can get to the students. And I know in some of the larger districts, it took... even after the first quarter, a large percentage of the students hadn't even gotten online yet. And do you feel like sometimes that parents now also need the technological skills to work this system?
Well, yes and no. It gets a little complicated because, you know, most districts have policies about parents being in a classroom, and technically a parent sitting there with a student,
they're
in our classroom, and that's not really allowed. But it's also not something that we can police or tell them not to do, because they're in their home on a computer and they're trying to help their child. There are some parents who do it appropriately, like they stay out of the screen, they don't use the chat. That's not for them. If they need to contact the teacher, they should be doing it by email, the same way they would have been doing it if we were in school. The students need to be somewhat left alone to be able to do school. It's not a good time to ask them to do a chore or to ask them, you know, I'm going to the grocery store. Is there anything you want?
Yes.
It's not time to ask that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I never really thought of that aspect of it. But, you know, whereas parents... have always been invited to come in, you know, into the schools and view the classes. You know, there's a procedure you go through to do that. And, you know, all of a sudden with this system, like you say, the parent is in the class with the student. And it's, like you say, you have no way of policing that. And I don't, you know, I imagine there's some even exchanges with teachers and parents over the, when they're right there next to the student. So that's gotta be a little frustrating. Are there requirements that they're not supposed to record you or when you're teaching a lesson or?
Oh yeah. They're not permitted to record. We do record our classes in my district. We record our lessons, and we post them.
Uh-huh.
So if a student misses, basically they could just attend the class asynchronously on their own anyway. So there's really no need for a parent to be recording a class. If they do that, they're recording other children's faces, possibly. And I guess they just have to ask themselves, would they really want somebody to be recording their child? And, you know, we assume that these are parents.
Right.
Parents and that they're good people, but we don't know if somebody has somebody over at their house that possibly would pass the checks, you know, and be allowed in a classroom.
Yeah, I never really even thought of some of those legal implications of, you know, privacy and, you know, if something got online that shouldn't get online. You know, does a district have some liability there? Boy, that's, and again, I think it just opens up a whole nother can of worms there that we haven't thought how to deal with.
Well, there's a lot that, you know, as we went into this, there were a lot of things we didn't know to know.
Yeah, I would agree. There was a lot more there was a lot more we didn't know than what we did know, that's for sure. And so do you see any positives out of this system?
Oh, for sure. There's many positives. You know, we have learned to be flexible. We've learned to be open-minded and think outside the box. Students have been forced to do that. And, you know, when given the opportunity, kids rise to the occasion, and they have. I would say they're handling it better than most adults.
And I think that, you know, I really believe that for the most part, kids are pretty resilient. And I think kids kind of, you know, can flow with emotion. Is this a fair statement? I think that just as they say after this pandemic, you know, the world's going to change. We're going to look at things a lot differently. But also, I think even in education, we're going to learn that there may be ways that we can use technology to our advantage and use it effectively in education. Maybe for some kids that want to take advanced classes that live in a very small community, they can connect in, you know, with larger districts and take those classes. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. It certainly opens up the possibilities for kids to be, you know, to have things available to them that never were before. And, you know, this isn't really a new thing. I mean, my dad went to school when I was a little girl. He graduated with his bachelor's degree, I think, in 86, and he did correspondence. So he went to school remotely way back then.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, I've done some work out at the women's prison, and they're pretty careful about how they let the inmates get online. But there are also ways that can be, you know, you can have firewalls and you can do different things. And it allows people that are incarcerated to actually build a skill while they're in prison and come out of there with some kind of a vocation. So I see a lot of advantages to that. Now your son is going to, did you say your son is going to WSU next year?
Yes, he's been accepted to WSU, but that's his backup plan. What he really wants is to go into the Air Force Academy. That is a very hard thing to get into right out of high school, but he's working very hard on, he's working on the steps for that. He's trying to finish his pilot's license here. He should have it any day. He's got to take his written test, and then he has a whole day of flight testing with an instructor. So, that's his dream, is to go into the Air Force Academy and fly.
Yeah.
Big planes, not fighter planes, but yeah.
Well, we've got to have dreams, and mm-hmm. You know, it's important that we do that. Do you think that this technology is harder for old geezers like me that are, you know, of course I've left education now, and I have to ask my granddaughter how to use my cell phone, and she's seven, and it's like, no, Grandpa. you know, here's how you do it, you know, let me press this button and get it right. So you think that teachers could benefit from more technology training? And is that one way that districts could support teachers a little differently?
Oh, definitely. And it's way tougher for, I wouldn't say necessarily older teachers, but just some of us. There are older teachers and teachers of every age that really embrace technology. But the vast majority of us are spending a lot of time learning right now and teaching it. And yes, that support time that we're providing kids could be our instruction time. So you know that next year, if we had to do this, heaven forbid, for another year, that next year there would be more efficient and effective instructional time as a result of our training from this year. I mean, we have to get better. The one thing about technology, though, is I keep thinking, you know, that it will become easier and more fluent and smoother. But as soon as I do, somebody struggles getting into a Zoom call or they get bumped out of it and have to come back in and they miss information. So, yes, I think that districts could provide more training. I think that they, unfortunately, we need really good equipment.
Right. That's expensive.
And the kids do, too. And, you know, they need test screens. It's very hard for a kid to show their work on, you know, for math on a mouse pad.
But yes.
They have whiteboards now that are on the computer. And
right.
They show their work just like on paper. And we're saving paper. You know, I'm hoping that it's good for the environment, too. As a math teacher,
yes.
I've always tried to get away from so much paper. So this has been, you know, like a forced opportunity to, you know, there's no paper. I'm not making the prints of the worksheets that I always do. And the kids struggle with their writing anyway. And on the computer, the ones that have had the touch screens or have been able to type, they're doing so much better. So there's a positive.
Yeah, I think that's a great positive. And let's hope that we're back to school and by next fall. I think that if we do get back to school by next fall, I think we're still going to have a lot of hybrid programs. I think there are still a lot of people that are going to be concerned about this and staff that are worried about, you know, getting COVID. And so I think it will change a lot of things. I also think that what I would like to see that improve is some of the areas, like I think you mentioned, and I know some of the other people I've interviewed mentioned, some of the classes like music or PE that really are hands-on, and that class is as much learning how to socialize and to collaborate with other people and, you know, participate on a team. I think those are the things that are the most difficult to get across on an online system. And it's tough to be sure if all students are really, really working at the same time. You know, when I taught distance learning classes at Central, I had one student that I could see in my screen that was, I can't remember where they were, over in Allensburg someplace. And they didn't know that I was watching them, but they were constantly on their cell phone. So in the back of the class. So I talked to one of the student's friends and got his cell phone number. And I called him up during class, right at the beginning of class. And I really would love to have a picture of the surprised look on his face when I said, "This is Dr. Nurse. Could you put the cell phone down, please?" You know, hands against the wall. I think that that's true. And I think, do you think it's more difficult for your kids if they are some of the kids that you work with more distracted? Is it tougher to keep them online for a longer period of time?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, I've been pretty impressed by how on they can be and how on time they can be. I mean, for the most part, I'm really proud of them. They're really rising to the occasion. But yes, I have had kids admit they have a warm blanket wrapped around them and they fell asleep during class. Or they got distracted, or they'll say, oh, I'll be right back. And then, you know, we go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
We go in, we go to the bathroom. Then on the way there, we think of something and we grab it. And we're very well intentioned. We think we're going to run right back. But, you know, you don't realize 10 minutes has gone by. So I have students come back and go, oh, I'm sorry, I missed what you just said. And I'm like, well, it's recorded.
Yes, yes.
I have to keep going or I'm going to lose my momentum. I'm going to miss information for other kids. The other kids are going to get bored because they have to hear it again. You know, right. I have to think about everyone. And not everyone is going to be happy under every circumstance. No matter what, you're going to have people you can't please. And the one thing that I do wish that parents would do if they hear something they don't understand or see something or their child's frustrated is to reach out for that teacher and ask them
right.
you know, what's going on. Because everything we do is with intention, and but it's packed in our little minds, and they might not understand or they might not see it. And coming to us, we can explain it. Going to our admin and complaining about us, that's not solving a problem. That's just trying to get someone in trouble. And if that's where you want to go, fine. But really, if you have a situation and you really want to solve a problem, your best person, your best point of contact really is that teacher. Go to them, ask them, talk to them. We want parents to call us.
Yeah, I know that. I remember when I had a resource. I started out teaching resource room in middle school. Well, it was a junior high school, 7, 8, and 9 in the Highline District when I started teaching. And I want you to know I made my annual salary. I made $6,000, and I got an extra $200 stipend for teaching special ed. But, that used to always drive me nuts when someone would have a complaint about one of my kids, and then they would go to the principal and say, just, you know, talk to me. Just, you know, I'm a good person. I can talk. I can figure these things out. I can solve the problem. But, that used to drive me nuts, too. So, what do you think we've got about 2 more minutes here online, you've been a wealth of knowledge on this issue. Tell me where you hope to be a year from now in education.
Well, in a year from now, you know, the most affected groups of students that I see our lower social economic status kids and homeless population here in Washington. And I'm hoping in a year that some things have changed for them, because as much as districts have tried to be as equitable as possible, these are the students that are falling through the cracks. And not only special education students, but general ed kiddos too. And they're already falling through the cracks. Now, some are just absolutely non-existent in the classroom in this remote setting. Even when supplied with tech, they have so many obstacles in their way. They're distracted. There's noise in the background. They're embarrassed. They don't want to turn their cameras on because they don't want people to see how they live. These kids sign on, and they're considered having been in class, yet they can't actually attend many of them. I have a student who his parent has brought in children, neighbor children, and expects his child to, this is a middle school child, eighth grader, expects him to babysit while the father collects money. And this child's not engaging in school. He's got 80 plus missing assignments, all F's.
Yeah.
We have kids it was just reported on the news how many kids are sleeping in hotels because they don't have foster placements for them, and they literally have to pack up their little bag every day because they might not stay in that hotel the next night. And, you know, I'm an adult, and I don't like staying in a hotel room by myself. I can't imagine being 7 or 8 years old and put in a hotel room and expected to pack up my bag every day. you know, these are the kids that we need to, we're failing these kids. Failing them, completely failing.
Wow. Let's hope that those things improve and we get going. And Amy, let's talk about this some more in the future. And we will, and checks back and forth. And thank you, Vashon, for listening. That was Amy. She's our teacher that we interviewed today. And take care. Have a wonderful day and be safe out there.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.